Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
Jeff, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. I think today's going to be a great show.
I think so, too. Yeah, we've been talking to lots of folks, but this is the first episode we've recorded in a little while. So, if it's a little rusty, that's why.
Ah, she's falling on the sword already. If our guest isn't good, it's Jeff's fault.
That's what we want to know. I don't think I'm worried about the guest at all.
No, I know. Well, look, the pressure's off, though, Olivier, just so you know. Let's introduce our guest, Jeff.
Yeah, for sure. So joining us today is Olivier Bousset. Olivier is the marketing manager at Rattal Limited Canada. Welcome to The Cooler Ring.
Thank you, and thank you for having me here.
Olivier, I kind of want to know all about Rattal Canada and how you ended up there and what you do there. So let's start with a bit of an introduction to the firm. What do you guys do at Rattal Canada?
So that's a great question, and thank you for that opening. So Rattal is an enclosure manufacturer. So we specialize in industrial and IT enclosures. And so to most people, what does that mean? It's basically the box that you put the stuff in. You'll see us everywhere, but you won't recognize us. I always say Rattal's like the tires of a car. You know the car brand, but you won't know the tires themselves. So we are a component of a complete solution. So Rattal specializes globally in enclosure manufacturing, such as you'll see at Hydro-Québec or electrical companies, large enclosures. You'll see us in food and beverages and pharmaceutical companies who does production lines. And so Rattal has a presence around the world, and I joined years ago in a sales role. And I started off in industrial sales, and I sort of coming out of university, joined up, and then moved up the ranks, ended up in IT sales when we did data centers. We specialize in, you can Google us and say Google data centers, and you'll see our enclosures there. And I ended up, one day they asked me to take over marketing because I have a marketing background, and we are up to date, present time.
It's an interesting product because, I mean, if you're installing those, there's not necessarily going to be a lot of Rattal branding on that. So people aren't necessarily going to recognize that as a distinct product. Eh?
No, it's actually really funny. So you'll see, and one of the things is as a Rattaller, you tend to find the boxes. It's almost like find Waldo. I'll look at TikTok videos and I'll see something that's unique that, you know, you never think of. For example, when you're looking at shipping container yards, the person who operates the boom that picks up the containers off the ship and loads them onto flatbeds for the longshoremen to haul away. Well, that boom is controlled by a company's drives that are basically ABB, which is the company who produces those. All those boxes inside are Rattal boxes. So we get to go in places that most people never think of because if there's any issues or any designing work that we need to do on the outside of the box, will be included in that. So we get to see a lot of stuff in the back end that most people will never see. Factory floors, government installations, all those things because we're in sort of the background. But you're right, most people they'll walk by them and never notice them. But as a Rattaller, we kind of joke, we take photos of wherever we find our boxes around the world.
I can actually look out my window. If I look far enough to the right, I can see the shipping containers and the yard down there. It's probably some Rattal boxes with inside.
100% inside the cranes, you'll find Rattal boxes, or sometimes competitors, but mostly Rattal when it's one of the bigger global ones.
I gotta say, this is a little bit of off program, but it's a bit of a shame that the Rattal brand is often hidden because I find that the brand has a really gorgeous aesthetic. There's a really unique aesthetic across the group of companies. I'd encourage listeners to go check out the Rattal website. I don't know, it has a nice feel to it.
It's a unique product. It's actually the history of the company it's a family-owned business. It's been around for decades and it's situated in Germany. And basically the entire town kind of works for Rattal and it's very common there. We have offices and manufacturing around the world. So it's interesting to get to meet all the other people from all the other subsidiaries and manufacturing site and get to hear their perspective of what they think Rattal is in that country.
You mentioned your sales and marketing and an IT sales background, but what brought you to Rattal 15 years ago?
It's actually, I'm not even sure how I got into it, but it's basically, it started off from a perspective of out of school, going into sales for an agency that was running, that was selling part of Rittal. And then I ended up, when Rittal opened up in 1995, they started to have their own office here, and the agency basically was absorbed by them. And I ended up in 1997 really sort of working for them. And that started my career down the path of sales along with them. And then we continue up to the present day, where I've sort of joined the whole company and then ended up in this current role. But it was kind of like a haphazard thing of trying to find work. And then sales is the easiest thing to get into when you first get out of university.
Assuming you have the personality.
Yeah, I was gonna say, maybe the easiest thing to get into, not the easiest thing to do.
definitely not. It's not my favorite thing to do. It's but it's funny, every day we touch sales, and every day we're selling something, and it taught me a lot in terms from marketing's perspective to understand the sales role. If you're only coming in from the marketing aspect, you kind of struggle to understand the salespeople. So when you're able to understand both sides, you sort of have an easier time to communicate your message to them.
Okay, Olivier, I want to start to dive into this passion of yours around leveraging automation and kind of getting more with less with smaller teams. And I think it's a thing that most manufacturers can really identify with, where everybody's being asked to do more with less. Not a lot of folks are eager to add headcount or even add partner count in today's economy. And it's an interesting time to have this conversation, because, of course, automation options for small teams are proliferating as well. So I'm really interested to dive into this with you. What would you say is the biggest untapped potential that those smaller teams have that you see when you start working with them or identifying these problems? And what is the thing that you think they miss the most?
That's a really interesting question. I think most people, if you don't, what you don't know, you don't know. There's a big disconnect between looking at marketing from perspective of simply just doing the job of marketing, and then looking at applications and platforms that can help support that particular task. So if we look at social media, we think of platforms like Blaze.ai that allows you to create filler posts, simplification of your social media, and then reducing your time spent on that. A lot of smaller firms and smaller companies, and even when you're looking at smaller teams within larger companies, the message has to be specific to your local market, right? So if you have to spend a ton of time looking at social media and creating posts to capture people's attention, well, a lot of it is in certain key, certainly in the Rittal aspect, it's more technical versus other consumer products, which is going to be a lot more fluff and just about images. For Rittal, it's not as easy. So when I look at smaller teams that have a unique product or a proposition, it's very difficult for them just to say, well, I'm going to build like a whole repertoire of social media content and pump it out. It's a lot easier by using automation to create the first phase, let it run on the background, be fillers, and then let yourself as a team concentrate on the higher end, the sort of like the long form content, the bigger form content if we want. And I feel it's really something that's important for people to look at as automation, is because when you're a small team, you also have a lot of churn in teams, right? People come and go and they leave. So you end up with a problem that if you're trying to build something and your team changes over time, nothing happens overnight in marketing, as we know. So allowing automation to run in the background while you're concentrating on the key aspects of your marketing program is really helpful. And I honestly believe a lot of companies are kind of leaving that on the side because they're not sure how to do it. They don't understand the platforms or how to really manipulate the platforms to their advantage.
Yeah, you really touch on something that I think a lot of people do tend to gloss over with smaller teams as well, is they do have more churn. There's more turnover. Harder to get brand continuity over time than a larger organization could obviously have a little bit more rigor, and they do tend to have more staying power in a lot of those roles. That's a really, I hadn't really thought about that from a smaller team perspective, but that does change things.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot more. It's even in large teams, you'll see like global marketing team. So you'll have a very large central HQ marketing team, and they have their message. But if their message is really not aimed globally, but more locally based out of where they're from. When that message is pushed down to smaller teams, they have to try and replicate that for their market. And if you have a lot of junior people or you have movement, it makes it very difficult to continually have to update that team to make sure they understand the message. Because it's not something you could just say, okay, here's our branding, here's our logo, here's our colors palette, go ahead and do something. You have to really get them to understand where you're coming from and where the message is coming from. And I see this a lot for companies that are starting to go global. So if your market is only Canada, well, that's pretty easy. If your market is Canada, US, it's not so bad. But if your market is starting growing to Latin America or to South Africa or to Asia or to Europe, that message has to change drastically. And your team has to understand where your product or your service sits within that market. Automation allows you to, in my opinion, sort of create a whole bunch of filler posts that are sort of universal, and then allows you to concentrate with your team to keep up to date to that message directly to that market. If you try to do everything yourself in-house, it's impossible. Like, you're going to get flooded with too much, and it's just overwhelming for a lot of teams. And most marketing teams are small. But you're not going to find, unless you're very lucky to be in a large team, most marketing teams are going to be between 3 to 10 people kind of thing, situations.
How do you... It's a really interesting idea, this notion of, you know, having global standards that get executed at a local level. And, you know, you're right. Like, in a lot of cases, people are handed a brand guidelines document and maybe some, you know, information about tone for how things are to be written, and then they're kind of left to their own devices. How do you help your team succeed when there's that level of nuance in the communication that's required? Like, how do you ensure that people have all the information they need in order to succeed at that local level?
Yeah, that's something that's really difficult, I find. It's one of those situations when you look at your marketing and your marketing plan, and you sort of say, okay, well, I'm going to put a marketing plan. Here's a marketing plan. Here's a document. Here's how we're going to proceed. Here's a timeline. Here's your calendar and all this stuff. Well, it's wonderful, except it's overwhelming for the individual who has to sort of manage each department, because they're going to have a million questions. They may be very creative in one aspect, but very weak in other aspects. So in my role, it's very difficult to sort of navigate that information locally. But not only that, you're also taking, let's say, in a global perspective, you have to take something that comes in from a different country with a different idea of what's important. So the focus on the European market might be completely different in a nuance for the Canadian market or the American market or the Latin America market. So you have to take it from your experience. And this is where I think it's really important to understand both the sales side and the marketing side. You need to understand where the focus is, because that's part of the conversation when you're looking about the individual aspects of marketing. But taking that document, if you want, from HQ and saying, okay, I'm going to kind of rewrite it for the Canadian market, that's actually really complicated, because your vision might not be what their vision is, and your market might not sit the same way. So products and sort of images and the focus are not the same. So you really need to have an understanding of where that product or that service is going to sit within your market. And then look at their document and say, okay, this part works for us. The rest of it is useless. But it takes a lot to go to your team and constantly. So I would say I spend a lot of times in meetings just going over and pivoting when we see something is not working, a lot of testing.
Olivia, you paint a bit of a picture there of, it sounds as though, you know, if we have some direction being set from HQ, we certainly need to look to the regions and their local knowledge in order to impart that level of nuance to it. Is there, I guess it seems to me like that's there's a lot of opportunity for conflict there. Do you feel that the secret is in the corporate having a bit of a lighter hand, or how do you navigate that? Because when you say, oh, well, you know, this part works great in the Canadian market, but, you know, 80% of this is crap, well, that can't be great for the person that was a part of creating that 80%. So I'm just wondering how you've balanced that kind of region knows best versus headquarters knows best.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's there's a right way of doing it, and there's the most common way of doing it. And I don't say it's wrong, it's just the most common, which is push down, right? So if you're not having a conversation with your regional, that means you're not having a monthly meeting with all your regional locations, the marketing heads, and having a real sit down and conversation, then you're just simply pushing down what you've been told. And that, certainly from a product standpoint, the product manager will be the deciding vote of where they see the product sitting in that market. But if they only understand their market, or they're looking at it from a regional aspect where they are situated, that could be a problematic point for a marketing person, because we have to decipher what that person's envisionment was. Do you go back and spend 10 hours explaining to them? That would be pointless. No, you don't. You absorb what you can and you run with it. I personally would rather see corporate, I mean, headquarters, make the decisions and pass down exactly all the content, and then you're tweaking it. This would simplify life, because then your message is universal. But if you don't have a corporate that's strong enough in their marketing that can really be able to do that, they have to rely on the regional. And there becomes a bit of a gray zone, because you end up with, let's say, certainly here in my experience, the US may take a different aspect because their market's slightly different, or they have a very large presence in a market that we don't in Canada. And so you'll end up with their focus being completely different than yours. But a lot of the followers follow both US and Canada, and sometimes even Mexico. And the messages, it's difficult to align them. But I honestly believe that should be something that a head office should take notice, but doesn't always. So I've noticed it on both sides. So my preference is that HQ would take a heavier hand. But my experience is that most of the times they don't. And it ends up being the local marketing person who has to sort of decipher, realign, and rebuild it from scratch, and kind of like just take it from there.
I think it's fascinating that somebody speaking from one of the regions of the company is advocating for the HQ to have a heavier hand. That's not always the case. So it's probably speaks well of your HQ. And it does seem to me to be ripe with danger, though, the more you rely on the regions, because the talent can vary so much from one region to the other. And to your point, an awful lot of those markets are people in those markets are being exposed to multiple channels from the same company. Mexico, U.S. and Canada being a great example of, you know, if you're a American prospect, you could be seeing social media feeds from all three entities, etc.
Yeah, it is something that has to be taken into account when you're building up your social media. It's something that we do, but it doesn't necessarily mean that each of the offices will agree to that. So they may have their own vision, and they're going to direct their team the way they want to. I recall I try to bring all the offices together regionally for us, Mexico, US, as well as some other smaller subsidiaries that match more our markets, such as Australia and Japan, and invite them to have every few months a meeting to review what we're doing, what we're planning to do, and see if it fits and if they want to take our content. One thing I've noticed is that our content's actually really good, and I'm not patting myself on the back only, but I will. They actually copy a lot of our content. And it's because we really focused on our followers. We try to see who they are, where they're coming from, and where we want to direct them to. We want to avoid having just people follow us just to follow us because they're looking to sell something to us, but rather for us to make sure the people who are following us want education. They want something from us that they can share within their channels or use themselves for their job. And that's something I think that anybody in marketing needs to consider. That they need to look at, what's my goal with my plan, and what's my goal with my audience, not just conversion to leads to sales. Right? We you know, marketing always knows this. You're going to get 100 leads. Well, yeah, okay, one or two becomes customers, but we have 10,000 followers for that 100 leads kind of a situation. So in marketing, we look at it from the followers' perspective. What do we want to educate them? Where do we want to lead them? And where do we want to leave them so that they feel that they're getting something from it? And we want to make sure that if we do something, we're hopeful that the other subsidiaries also follow. Because if they match our aesthetics, our designs, and our sort of language to our audience, then their audience will most likely look at ours because we're very similar in markets. So that's what you hope for. It doesn't always happen. I've noticed things, for example, in holidays. How do you go and deal with holidays that are regional? And, you know, what you celebrate and how do you celebrate these? These are things that are very complicated when you're a global company versus a local company. But it's definitely you try to get as much of the message as possible out there to say, this is what we're doing. Hopefully, if you have a better idea or you know what you something different, let us know. And most times, though, people kind of like follow through. And I think that's important. And it shows that we're on the right track, at least.
Man, I really like the idea of understanding full well that a good chunk of your follower base is going to be people who are trying to sell to you. You know, we've often talked about the idea of, chasing follower counts being a bit of a vanity metric and certainly not meaning anything, but recognizing that a good chunk of those people are actually following you for the opposite reason and not just, that they're, that they are not going to be influenced in that way and they're going to use those things to try and get in touch with you. That's a pretty smart bit of, intelligence to consider when you're looking at those overall kind of metrics.
I think it's important for individuals to understand that, because if you're looking at marketing and when I first started, we just assumed the same thing, right? How many followers are you going to get? Well, when you're in Rattal and you have such a small market in the sense of who you're really trying to attract, and you start seeing a large group of followers, you have to ask yourself, who are they? Where are they following? Why are they following us here? What is the goal? And it's true. Some of them are trying to look at to sell things to Rattal, but they're also looking to see who engages with our brand, because they could be selling services or products to that same. And that's part of marketing, right? So you're not only just trying to push your brand, you know there's going to be people who are piggybacking on it. So recognizing that, to make sure that you're able to break them away from your content, to drive the people that are interested in your content for reasons to either ultimately purchase your product, is really important. But that becomes this whole, it's part of the game, right? It's part of understanding the difference between what's filler content and what is the educational content that's really going to drive leads and ultimately sales.
Olivia, I can appreciate this notion of leveraging automation, particularly for the filler content that you mentioned. I'm wondering where else in the marketing mix you're advising small teams to leverage automation to be able to extract more value out of their efforts.
Oh, this is the easiest one. Having a chatbot on your website. So if you go to a lot of websites, I'm amazed that not everybody has a chatbot. It's complicated. It's a lot of companies shy away from it. They have a lot of reasons, but it's something that I feel is super important. When we look at most people today, they will communicate quickly to a chatbot to understand the basics of what they're looking for, to help them guide them to the right. Certainly if you have multiple products, if you're a single product company, it's pretty easy. You could buy online. Well, you could just kind of maybe avoid it. But even then, I think it's super important. I look at all companies that are very much online. They use chatbots, and a lot of smaller companies don't. And I feel that's number one, just communicating. If I were to say that's probably the way most companies can 2x their results, even 3x them, is answer the phone. Be able to be communicated by your customers or even potential customers, the influencers and the champions. They're people that are looking to build the products. For example, a lot of our products, because they're built up in the design of an engineering company, well, if we're not answering the engineers, are they going to put our products? They're going to spec our products? No, they're going to spec somebody who does answer their questions, right? And it's really important to be able to reach out to those people and say, hey, we can answer your questions. And so automation in marketing is also part of that. It's understanding how quickly we can answer the most basic questions for your potential customers, your leads, those interested, the champions, the influencers, answer those questions as possible. So yeah, automation, just answering the phone would be one of the biggest things.
I've seen this so much. I've seen manufacturers who are, you ask them what the single most important thing that they need to deliver better results next month, and they'll say more leads. And then you can literally look in the CRM in the last week and see 100 leads that didn't receive a phone call back that are actually all properly qualified.
100%.
And so frankly, so much of the chatbot conversation, sometimes it sounds a little bit like religion. So people just believe in the chatbot, and therefore you ought to have chatbots. But I was encouraged when you took it down the road of no, you're using this technology because it's frankly a way of answering the phone, and otherwise there are just leads going stale. You're trying to engage with you and you're ignoring them.
Well, and you know, to your other point, salespeople who are trying to sell you things are not going to use your chatbot. Like, ever. It's not geared for them. So they're not going to find that useful. They'll find other ways to reach out to you. But the people who are actually interested are going to engage with that tool.
100%. You need to give them a channel. You need basically a way for them to communicate with you. And it, in terms of automation, when I look at all the simplifications we can do by using simple platforms, such as, like I said, you know, your chatbots, your filler post, just the terms of speed of getting information to the person who's asking for it, it can make a difference between a successful sale down the road versus them going to your competitor who was able to answer that question. And in terms of marketing, what's really important is not just driving a message out there, obviously the branding and all that, but it's also to make sure that there's a way for them to get back to you. There has to be a pathway. I find a lot of people are looking at marketing like as they're pushing out only. But part of marketing is that point where it touches sales and marketing, which is the lead back into you to be able to answer those questions. And smart companies are able to capitalize on that, and they leverage that. So the chatbots, quick answers, links on your social media to be able to drive a person directly to where they need to go is super important.
Olivia, you mentioned, you know, in a couple of these examples, they're really, we're talking about the implementing what are fundamentally out-of-the-box tools that you can, you know, getting a chatbot onto your website or automating social media post creation. I guess, does most of your advice for smaller teams hinge on leveraging pre-existing tools, or to what extent are you also looking at more, say, customized advice about different maybe approaches of using ChatGPT or other AI tools to improve their workflow? Have you spent much time there, or are you thinking mostly about just tool adoption at this stage that can get some easy wins?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because in my opinion, if you're looking at a smaller firm, the quicker you can get out there and automate a lot of the services that you're going to be using and automate part of your process, you can concentrate. It's really important. But is it perfect? No, because they're out of the box. They're like off the shelf basic solutions. We're AI and starting to integrate that, it's a bigger complex. So that becomes a bigger deal for a marketing department that you need more resources to be able to take that on. And it's very complicated because it doesn't mean it will fall under marketing. It could be fall under multiple different departments. AI can be tricky because there could be policies around using it. There could be policies, security policies. Certainly, like if your company has a lot of security rules around using any exterior services. So it's not as simple. But it's definitely something I would look at. There is brilliant people out there that run a team of 2-3 people that are running massive companies. And they're just these small teams of people. And I honestly believe we're probably going to see in the next 5 years, unicorn-sized companies run with one person and ChatGPT. Because if you could do it from there, you can create everybody. Virtual assistants, automatic responses, automatic posting that reacts to what works, what doesn't work. Metrics that are, you know, once you set the in motion your metrics that you want to receive, if you know posts when hit a certain amount, you know you can concentrate on those posts and you can tell your AI to go back and concentrate on those kind of posts. That's the future. Right now, I think it's still too complicated for most teams to take on. There's just the amount of resources required to run that properly without it going crazy or giving misinformation is really also another issue.
It's the catch-22 that small teams find themselves in, of course, because they know that it's a secret to being able to do more with less, but they're also facing the crunch of having to focus some energy on it. Yeah.
It also comes from the company side. What happens if you lose your key people? I've seen it firsthand. You lose key people, you're basically shutting down a whole program. Because to replace that person, there's a timeline, right? You hire the person, find them, hire them, get them up to speed. You're looking at half a year to a year. And it's a costly endeavor. We've tried a few times. We've had that happen to us. So simplification just makes it easier if you're not sure, you know, unless the company has a bigger plan for their marketing that they've really set up, that they have a goal and they're backing you up, it's perfect. But if you're not, if you're more of a standard company that's going to be running marketing the way it's happening across the board that I've seen, you're better off to have smaller, faster deployments to avoid losing that key person that shuts down that program.
Makes a lot of sense. And it's going to become the norm more and more, I think, is forward right now.
Well, this has been a really interesting chat, Olivia. I wonder, as we draw to the close here, you know, I don't want to poke too much fun here because my hairline isn't far behind your and Jeff's, but just all that to say, we have some good experience on the show today. And so when I have someone of your tenure and experience, I like to ask, what's your advice for somebody just getting into marketing today, just starting out? What's the piece of advice that you would give them?
I would definitely join meetups. I would join groups and association in marketing and sales. And I would definitely spend time talking to people. It's one thing I've noticed that we work a lot in silos and tiny little groups and tiny companies. It's not easy always to share. But if you're able to talk to people, one of the things I've learned a lot is going to meetups and talking about marketing to people and saying, okay, what works for you? What doesn't work for you? It doesn't mean it's going to work for every company, but just understanding it might have a little part, a slither that you could use at your own job. The other thing too, I would say is try a lot. You know, venture off, do A/B testing. Don't be stuck going too far, you know, into perfection. Just launch and see where it goes. Marketing is something that's flowing and changing. We know that social media marketing is kind of like disappearing because now with AI, everything could be reproduced. People are starting to get savvy, their understanding. So where are people looking for their information? Where are they hanging around? And being there present is really important. For example, Pinterest. I hope I'm saying it right. It's something that I met somebody at Pinterest. They invited me to a seminar and I went to see it. I said, oh, this is nothing. This won't be helpful. And then I realized, actually, there's a lot of people on Pinterest. So testing it out, you know, taking a chance, putting some effort into it, gives you a lot of experience. And it's really important for a marketing person to get as much experience as possible. And the last thing I'll say, I think every marketing person should take on a sales role. They should learn what it's like selling, whether it's at a local retail shop or on a sales road, or go with salespeople on the road and get an experience trying to sell something. Because if you don't understand that aspect, then you're only promoting from one direction. You're not really getting to understand what's the whole journey of the customer and what's the role that marketing plays. That would be my advice.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, Olivier. Especially, I think you're right. It's easy to try to identify as the consumer of marketing messages if you're a marketer, because you also consume marketing messages, but without that sales experience, you have a really big blind spot. So I think that's incredible advice. It's been wonderful to have you on the show, Olivia. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you. It's been a blast being with you guys and getting to talk marketing.
Yeah, thanks so much, Olivia.